This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
This year's crop of nominees for the Best International Feature Oscar adopt vastly different approaches to tell their disparate stories.
There's a couple that tackle the specter of fascism, one about the plight of migrants, and one about an infamous real-life plane crash and its aftermath. Also, there's one about a guy who cleans toilets. So yeah, a wide range. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Aisha Harris. And today we're talking about this year's Oscar-nominated international features and how you can see them on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. On The Sympathizer podcast, host Philip Nguyen joins the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen to discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. What's the right amount of socializing for you? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can help you figure out your boundaries, how to recharge, and your social sweet spot so you can build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Try therapy with BetterHelp. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
All right, it's just me and Glenn today, and we've got a lot to cover, so let's just jump right on in. Mm-hmm. Let's kick things off with Perfect Days. This is Japan's entry. It was directed by German filmmaker Wim Wenders. He's known for films like Paris, Texas and Wings of Desire. And Perfect Days is, I think we can both agree, maybe the happiest or entertaining of the bunch.
Least wrenching.
Yes, least wrenching. This one is about a middle-aged man who's played by the great Japanese actor Koji Yakusho. He cleans the most beautiful public toilets I've ever seen.
Amazing.
Ever. This is like one of my main notes in Tokyo. And he approaches his job with a sense of thoroughness and contentment and mostly routine until, of course, that routine gets upset by an unexpected visitor. Perfect Days is in theaters now. And Glenn, what did you think of this movie?
This movie is, as the kids say, it's a mood. And I really ended up liking this a lot. Yeah. I was worried that I wasn't because this belongs on paper to a species of indie film, largely American indie film, where we take somebody who works with their hands, a blue-collar person, and then we rush to say, oh, but they're not just a blue-collar person.
Yes, yes.
Look, they read poetry. Look, they have an aesthetic. They care about photography. And that is, if it's done poorly, that's very twee.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of Bushwick condescending where we have to say this person shares our aesthetics life. This neatly avoids that, largely on the back of Koji Yakusho, who is so good.
Yes.
As this guy whose face is so, I mean, I want to say it's expressive, but it's not particularly expressive physically, but it's expressive soulfully.
Yeah.
I went into this film not really knowing if he was content or lonely. I think he's somewhere in the middle. And, you know, it's another like indie film trope of like he's got a routine and then somebody comes along and upsets that routine and he learns a lesson about, you know, how routines are bad. This is not that film either. Mm-hmm. This ends up being a really little gem, a multifaceted little gem of a film.
Yeah, I landed in the exact same way as you did. All of these movies in some way fall into some sort of trope or some sort of formula that I think we've seen many, many times.
Yeah.
And what really makes the difference is the crafting of how that unfolds, but also the performances. And I also think it's not a spoiler to say that this movie, as we've kind of hinted at already, like it has an optimism to it.
Mm-hmm.
I kept waiting for something truly, truly, truly horrible to happen. And it didn't. Like it still hit me in the gut towards the end.
Yeah.
There's one scene in particular, but there's just such hope in it. And boy, it's nice to have that right now.
Absolutely. And it's also culturally interesting. Like those toilets, as you mentioned, man, I would walk into one of those toilets and feel instantly guilty and then leave because I would not want to sully them.
Yeah, the designs, just Americans, we do terrible at this. Okay. Tell us about the next film.
Next up is Io Capitano. It's Italy's entry. The film is directed by Matteo Garrone, and it follows two teenagers from Senegal who decide to migrate to Italy so they can send money back to their families. They depart Dakar with high hopes and fake passports, only to face a grueling trek through the desert and corrupt officials and imprisonment and torture. Io Capitano is in theaters now. What'd you think?
This was a journey for me.
Mm-hmm. It's a journey for them.
Yes. Well, it took me a little while before I kind of understood what this was trying to tell or what felt different about this story.
Mm-hmm.
I feel as though there's been quite a few films in the last few years, some that I've really liked that have been about African immigrants, and they're directed by, you know, non-Black directors, usually European. And this is what we have here as well. So it definitely hits some notes. But I think that the performances here, especially by the lead performance of Seydou Sarr, who plays a character named Seydou, talk about soulful. Like, again, this is a performance that is so steeped in soul and like making these characters who are dealing with the worst aspects of human nature and people who just have terrible, everyone's out for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that this movie also didn't leave me like totally depressed by the end is a testament to the filmmaking and also to the performances here.
You know, this film spends so much time in those initial scenes with Seydou and his friend in Dakar. We see their lives. We see how kind of tender they are with each other. We see how warm his mother is and how his great relationship with his family. And you wonder, okay, is this just setting up how bad things are going to get? And it kind of is, but it isn't, because it's there so that when things get as grueling and terrible as they are on his journey, that we will ask the question he asks, which is why not turn back, right? Ultimately, it doesn't come off as saccharine. It comes off as like, we need this because eventually his reality is going to break in small ways, as with dream sequences. And we need those. We need to see like why he's having those breaks. It's because his family life and his home life there was something that he would hark back to at the darkest parts of his journey.
Yeah, definitely. So yes, that is Io Capitano. It's in theaters, and I think it's definitely worth people checking out.
Definitely.
So the next film in the category is Society of the Snow, which comes from Spain. I would venture to say this feels like the most conventionally Hollywood-esque, at least the way it's shot, I think, in sort of the narrative story being told here. But it's the story of the 1972 crash of a plane in the Andes Mountains. A Uruguayan rugby team was actually stranded there for months and eventually turned to cannibalism to survive. It's a pretty well-known story, but the director, J.A. Bayona, he really, really gets into the nitty-gritty of the details, including how the crash went down. It was, for me, one of the most harrowing sequences I've seen, like, on screen in a very long time. Just the way it really digs into that, the plane crashing and all the things that happen afterwards. So yeah, that's Society of the Snow. It's streaming on Netflix. And Glenn, I'm curious to hear what you thought about this.
I agree that it is a conventional narrative that is concerned with logistics, really. It's going out of its way not to sensationalize any of this stuff, because the fact is that we're dealing with cannibalism that gets dramatized very matter-of-factly with an attention to detail that provides context without kind of minimizing the horror of it all, right?
Yeah.
What I thought was an interesting thing about it, and I agree with you that plane crash sequence, I mean, people will cancel vacation plans if they see that plane crash sequence, but I couldn't help but wonder why he ended where he does. He ends right at the rescue. And if you know anything about the story, you know that there was a protracted period of time when the survivors came in for protracted public shaming. Mm. And that struck me as an important part of the story, because this whole how this narrative got turned around to the testament to the human spirit, which it is today,
yeah,
that took a long, long time of just kind of changing public minds by telling the story, you know, in films like Alive.
Yeah.
I wanted him to be interested in the kind of lingering emotional aftermath, but he was really, that's not this film. This film puts you in the grim, immediate logistics of surviving.
Yeah. And I think that's where I get the sort of observation that it feels very conventionally Hollywood mm-hmm. in a way, mm-hmm. because you can imagine that a movie made in America would also focus on those details. I mean, we've had Yellow Jackets and yep. Lost and all those things.
Yep.
And that's not what this is, but it did bring those things to mind for me. I think my biggest issue with this film was, like you said, it's not focused on sort of the grander themes about the politics of it all that came mm-hmm. with it. And that is also baked into just the way these characters are written. For the most part, I couldn't really tell any of them apart by defining characteristics of who they were.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of just like briefly meet all of them and get names and perhaps we get ages, but then like the plane crashes and then a lot of them die and then some die later. And I wanted to know, obviously we should care this happened to mm-hmm. real people, but like what made them people beyond just this crash?
Right.
And I kind of wish it had focused more on that. The only character we get like a full sense of is Numa, who does the voiceover narration. He's played by Enzo Vogrinchik.
Mm-hmm.
But like, even then, he's just not really built out. So that's just what I wanted more of from this movie.
I hear you. I mean, like basically this film, you know, the survivors were involved. They advised on the story, and that's going to affect how they get dramatized. And it's inevitable. It's part of the deal.
Yeah. Well, again, that's Society of the Snow, and you can find it streaming on Netflix. Glenn, what is up next?
Next, we have The Teacher's Lounge, which is Germany's entry. The film was directed by Iker Chatak. It's about an idealistic middle school teacher who rushes to the defense of a kid accused of stealing money on school grounds. But her efforts to exonerate the kid only amplify the prejudices and mistrust of both faculty and students, leading to paranoia and ultimately violence. The Teacher's Lounge is in theaters now. Lots of folks talking about this film's allegorical qualities. Yeah. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, this is a dark movie. This felt like a thriller in many ways. And mm-hmm. Every character, almost every character in this film, especially the teachers, seem to make choices that just make you kind of want to crawl out of your skin and just be like, why are we making these choices? That's, to me, not the script's fault. Like, no, it's just you can imagine that this is how it would go down in real life. And I think the fact that we are seeing so many of these both ideological and more like literal battles are being fought in schools amongst teachers and parents. And it just felt very, very timely in many ways, but mm-hmm. not too heavy on like trying to make the allegorical things so obvious, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And that's why I liked it as much as I did. I mean, like I heard about this film before I saw it and people were talking about its allegorical, its parable quality. And I don't like allegory. I think it's it kind of closes down things. And so I went into it with my arms crossed. But this film is very precise and very specific in the tensions that it evokes and the tone that it portrays. And so I think it works best as a drama. This is, as you mentioned, a thriller, but it's a very slow walk, patient thriller that invites us to watch this very well-intentioned character make choice after mm-hmm. choice after choice that is just shutting down her options, right? One by one, you just see doors slamming around her. And by the time she realizes how much her world is closed in around her, it's too late. I dug it. It was a tough watch.
Yes, definitely a tough watch. But I think it's definitely worth checking out as well. So that's The Teacher's Lounge. You can find it in theaters now. And the final film is one we've actually, you and I both, Glenn, chatted about on a full episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't dig too deeply into it here. You can go back and listen to it. But that is The Zone of Interest. It's the UK entry. And it was nominated for 5 total Oscars this year. So you've probably, of all of these films, have heard about this film the most. The other ones were for Best Picture, Sound, Adapted Screenplay, and Directing for Jonathan Glazer. And the film is about the domestic life of a man who runs the Auschwitz death camp. He's built this basically very idyllic existence with his wife and 5 kids in a very well-appointed house with a lush garden right next to the camp. And Glazer focuses only on the family. So the horror is happening literally just over the garden wall. And we hear it, but it's never depicted. And that, of course, is sort of, I think, what is making this such a talked about film, powerful film. Mm-hmm. And it's in theaters now and available for purchase for VOD. But really quickly, Glenn, do you still feel the same about this film as you did, you know, when we talked about it before?
Yeah, of the five, this is the one that has stuck with me most. I mean, basically the fact that there's no close-ups in this film. It's all medium long shots. The scenes in the house were filmed with hidden cameras and with the crew not on set. They were watching from a distance. So we get this chilliness. The actors were just running through their takes, very, very long takes. That keeps this thing at this chilly distance, which is implicating, right? And is unsettling. And so, yeah, this is the one that got under my skin the most. I think this is the one that deserves to win, actually.
Yeah. I think I was a little cooler on it initially than you were at the time that we talked about it. And I still feel as though my critiques about how it feels like it spins its wheels a bit midway through the film. Mm-hmm. But it is just the premise itself is just such a standout. Mm-hmm. So that is The Zone of Interest. It is in theaters and also available for purchase on VOD. I do think it will win as well. Mm-hmm. I think I would want Perfect Days. That's like my personal favorite out of all of these. But sure. I would be happy if this won as well, because it really is doing something very different here. And it does kind of knock the wind out of you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
And those are the five nominees for this year for Best International Feature. Mm-hmm. You should let us know what you think about all of those Oscar-nominated movies. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Glenn Weldon, thanks so much for being here.
Sure, pal.
And this episode was produced by Skylar Swenson and Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This message comes from the Pop Culture Moms podcast. Best friends Andy and Sabrina take their obsession with TV and movies to the next level, talking to celebrities about the comedy and tragedy of parenthood and the fictional moms they love most. Listen to Pop Culture Moms wherever you get podcasts.